He's Jim Browdy.
And she's Marjorie Egan.
And this is Boston Public Radio.
89.7 WGBH, WGBH HD1 Boston.
Online at WGBHnews.org.
Boston's local NPR. Welcome back to Boston Public Radio, Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. So as you know, the state yesterday voted to move ahead with the Green Line extension, albeit a scaled-down plan. Could the North-South Rail Link be next? Who better to talk about this than Governor Michael Dukakis? The governor is a distinguished professor of political science at Northeastern University, a visiting professor, I'm sure he's distinguished there too, at the Luskin School of Public Affairs at UCLA. Governor Dukakis, it's great to see you.
It's good to be here. Missed you guys.
Oh, thank you very much, because you've been out in the West Coast, the nice
warm weather. And in Armenia, of all places.
Yeah, in Armenia, so. I know.
Well, it's nice to be back.
Very exciting. I was in Quincy last week. I just wanted to know. Now, Governor, I didn't want to start this. I didn't want to start this way, but Jim insisted.
I did.
With a name association game. You ready?
Yeah.
Donald Trump.
A gift from God to the Democratic Party if we take advantage of it.
Ooh. Now,
so
ooh,
explain
that's a big
both
if.
Parts of that sentence. What does that mean, Governor Dukakis?
Look, this is an opportunity for the Democratic Party not only to win the presidency, but to win the Congress back. But it's not going to fall into our laps. This is going to be a 50-state campaign, Jim. 200,000 precincts, no fooling around, no reds and blues and all that nonsense. And I'm serious. But if we do that, this could be a transformative election.
But do you, first of all, there were polls this morning. We were talking to John King about 2 hours ago, saying that it is a dead heat in Ohio, Florida, and Pennsylvania, which I assume is troubling for people like you. Do you not accept, I know you're not a big fan of Donald Trump. I believe you called him nuts in one word on another
although
interview.
He said good things about me in 1988, you know.
Is that really true?
Yes, yes. He was asked on CNN, what do you think? And he said, well, Bush is okay, but I like this guy, Mike Dukakis.
Do you know him? Do you know him at all?
No.
What was that about?
He just kind of liked me.
Okay. So,
but he was a Democrat then, right?
Well, he was whatever he was.
He was a Democrat then.
But seriously, Governor, you appreciate how he's connected with a piece of the electorate here which is really unhappy with the dysfunction of Washington with, I mean, you get that. I mean, I'm sure you do,
this
right?
It's been going on for some time, Jim. Remember, Reagan won a lot of these folks, a lot of white working class guys and so on and so forth. I got some of them back. Clinton got them all back. But it's a continuing problem. And it isn't that I don't think the social issues are important. And I certainly think that reaching out to minority communities and others is a very important part of what we ought to be doing, the Democratic Party ought to be doing. But there's no excuse. Look, I won West Virginia by 12 percentage points. I won West Virginia by 12%. You know, working class West Virginia. There's no reason why we shouldn't be able to get those folks back. But we've got to deal with the issues they care about. And I'm not sure we're doing that very effectively.
Well, what should Hillary Clinton be doing differently?
Well, let me just give an example of this. Not so much.
And we should say you supported her in this primary season. Yeah.
Health care. 80 to 85% of the uninsured people in this country, before the passage of the Affordable Care Act, were working or members of working families. And if you went out and took a poll tomorrow and said the American people, should working Americans and their families have decent, affordable health care, 93% say yes. But we never talked about working people. Most people don't know that. Most people thought it was some kind of a welfare program where we were taking money from them and giving it to somebody else. You know, in delivering a message about what we're trying to do as Democrats, we've got to understand that. The most popular program that I was responsible for as governor was the Welfare to Work program. We were putting 15,000 welfare mothers to work every year. In good jobs, the vast majority of them never, ever saw welfare again. No surprise that people liked it. All people. It's popular with conservatives, popular with liberals, popular with working folks. I mean, I think we've got to understand that that's a core constituency of ours, and we've got to speak to them. And I don't think we're doing that as well as we should be. Well, but this is a good opportunity to do it.
Governor Dukakis, I've been kind of like a broken record on this, but one of the reasons, it seems to me anyway, that Trump has done so well and that Bernie Sanders is doing so well is because they are talking to that working class and middle class voter who is in terrible anxiety about, you know, having $5 left over at the end of the week, right, even though they're working very hard. And it seemed to me that Hillary Clinton has been kind of slow to get on the bandwagon there to realize it.
Oh, I don't think so, Marcia. You know, if you look at her voting record and Bernie Sanders' voting record in the Senate, there isn't a dime's worth of difference between them, except that Sanders was a little less tough on guns, right?
Yep.
Otherwise, I mean, it's identical. The important thing...
Well, there was a war vote where it was not identical, which is a pretty important part
enough.
Of this campaign and the Obama
Fair
campaign.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. And I'm the last guy in the world to try to advise anybody on messaging, you know, and so on, given what happened to me in 88. But I do think that we've got to be thinking about this all the time so we don't let a great achievement, the Affordable Care Act, kind of dissolve into a divisive issue when, in point of fact, 90% of the American people, if they knew what really it was doing, would be for it. And I don't think we did that very well. I don't think the White House did it very well, and Barack Obama's a hell of a lot better communicated than Mike Dukakis. And I don't think the Democrats in Congress did it very well. I mean, it was just kind of, well, everybody knows that this is a good thing. No, everybody doesn't know that. And
well,
you've got to be able to tell that.
Well, also, everybody does know, though, that even when they do have insurance through their employer, their co-pays and their proportion of what they're paying is going up and up. So you don't – I think the average person doesn't see what Obamacare has gotten for them because – they're still paying huge out-of-pocket costs.
You're right, though. It depends on the person. I mean, we have 20 million people that now have health insurance that didn't have it.
Right.
And that does include another several million who are going to community health centers whose size is being doubled under the Affordable Care Act, something that nobody ever talks about.
No one ever does talk about it. You're absolutely right.
You know, we got 52 of them in the state of Massachusetts. They're terrific. They provide great health care. We're not talking about this. And it seems to me that's the kind of thing we got to do.
You know, in the many times I've spoken to you since in the last, well, I guess, 25 years I've known you, I've almost never brought up your race for the presidency. And in part, because one of the things I really admire about you so much is you're as comfortable in your own skin as any, no, I'm serious, as any big-time politician I've ever encountered. However, do you ever say to yourself, you didn't just lose a presidential election. Had you won that race, the whole course of history would have been changed. There wouldn't have been Bush 41. By definition, there would not have been Bush 43.
Right.
So there might not have been an Iraq war.
There never would have been an Iraq war.
So do you ever, are you the kind of person who ever, I wouldn't say agonize because you don't seem to be an agonizing kind of, do you ever sit back in your home at night and think about what if, or was that just history and you move on?
Well, you get tired of that.
I know you do.
After about the first 6 months, you know. And I blew that election. I mean, there's no question about it. That was an eminently winnable election. And I made a couple of very serious mistakes that cost it to me. But I don't think, Jim, you can kind of sit there and say, well, what if and what if?
Because it's,
mean,
not mentally healthy?
Well,
is that why?
Look, I'm a guy that looks ahead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm fortunate enough that I have been teaching for the past 25 years. I love teaching. I love working with these kids. We're producing some wonderful young people. And I'm also, because of the teaching, I can stay actively involved and do the kinds of things that Bill Weld and I are trying to do on the transportation
side. Well,
we're
going to talk about that, yeah.
And all that kind of thing. So it's been, you know, I wish I'd become president. I think the course of history would have been significantly different. You know, I kind of half-laughingly say, I owe you all an apology. If I'd beaten the old man, you'd never heard of the kid. And life would have been very different. But you just can't dwell on it forever.
And you would have spared Jeb a lot of embarrassment,
indeed,
too, Governor Dukakis. So
yeah.
I want to talk about this North-South rail thing. People know that you have teamed up with Bill Weld, and you're big-time advocates of this. We had Seth Moulton on with us, I don't know, a week or two ago.
Who's terrific, by the way.
Not only is great
is
on
terrific.
This, but we had no idea he was involved in one of our favorite topics, and I know yours, high-speed rail, when he was working in Texas before he ran for Congress after he left the service.
Yep.
So make the basic case in a minute or two for North-South Rail, how it's affordable, and then we'll tell you some of the questions that we and listeners have about the project.
Okay. First, it's important to understand that both South and North Station are getting increasingly congested. And we're getting perilously close to a point where we're not going to be able to get any more trains into those stations. Both of them, by the way. Now, the answer from the Massachusetts Department of Transportation over the course of the past few years, under administrations of both parties, has been that we ought to expand South Station and add another 7 tracks. And we are paying consultants, even as we speak, to plan that for $1.6 billion for 7 tracks. That's insane. Nobody in the railroad business is expanding 19th-century stub-end stations. They're connecting them. There must be 50 major cities all over the world that have the same problem we do, and they're connecting them. And that's exactly what we should do. Not spend any more time on this foolishness about expanding South Station. It won't solve the problem.
First of all, it's not South Station. It's a Michael S. Dukakis Transportation Center. South Station.
So the obvious answer is to do what every other major city in the world, and by the way, they're doing this everywhere, and that is to connect the two stations. And it's quite doable. But we got to get on with it, Jim, because Boston is booming. Construction projects are popping up all over the place. The last thing in the world we need is some office building that is located in a place that compromises our ability to connect those two stations. Can we do it? Look, the closest thing to the North-South Rail Link that we've done is the extension of the Red Line from Harvard Square to Alewife. Mm-hmm. 3.2 miles, that's longer. 140 feet deep at Porter Square. You know, I've heard stuff out of MassDOT that it's going to be very deep. We're down 140 feet. And we did that.
Congressman Moulton says that also with the new technology, there'd be virtually no disruption above ground.
You won't even know what's happening. But look, you know Cambridge. We didn't even know the Red Line extension was happening, did we?
Well, but you know, Governor, first of all, Stephanie Pollack, who you obviously know quite well from her former life, and she's now the Charlie Baker's head of the Transportation Department, said to the Globe recently, we need to expand South Station. Charlie Baker, pretty smart guy, seems to be pretty committed to that, too. If it's so obvious to you, and I assume Governor Weld, that that's not the right solution.
And Seth Moulton, who I assume addressed this as well.
Why don't they get it? I mean,
because they're not doing the work, quite frankly. Now, look, a governor can't be an expert in everything. He's obviously got to be advised by his people. But and we've met with Charlie, and he's a reasonable guy, and he's a bright guy, and so on and so forth. But he's getting lousy advice from MassDOT, I just got to tell you. They don't understand the project. They never have. They've never been sympathetic to it under Deval Patrick as well as Charlie Baker. And it's time that Stephanie and the people down there take a good hard look at this and understand that this is the alternative. And I'm sure Congressman Moulton made that case to you as well, very strongly. Imagine $1.6 billion for 7 tracks. They can't be serious. And by the way, that doesn't include the cost of expanding North Station.
Yeah, but just one thing. I'm glad you mentioned the $1.6 billion because we're going to talk to our listeners about this after you go. And we mentioned this to Congressman Moulton, too. And I think we've mentioned it to the governor when we've talked to him about it. And actually, the governor's here, I think, next Thursday. And we'll bring it up with him again after your comments today. $1.6 billion. And the first thing that comes to mind, you know this because you started it. People say, big dig 2.0. We were promised $1.6 billion, $2 billion when Dukakis put this thing together. We end up with $16 billion. Why should we trust anybody, I don't care who it is, to not be giving us big dig, even if it's a wonderful project, in terms of our pocketbooks, big dig part two?
Well, it's a very different project for one thing, obviously. I mean, we're not going to rip up the city and so forth. Secondly, remember, Jim, there was another big public works project that began at about the same time. It's called the Harbor Cleanup. On time and under budget. Now, I won't get into the reasons why that was successful and the other one wasn't. It had a lot to do with people and a variety of other things. But nobody's going to tell me that we aren't capable of doing it. Look, Red Line extension, in current dollars, what do you think the cost was? $1.6 billion.
Mm-hmm. So,
Los Angeles, where I spend 3 months of the year, is doing its downtown connector, its version of the North-South Rail Link, 2 miles, 3 new stations, $1.4 billion, under construction. Now, we got some problems at MassDOT. I mean, you can't believe a number that comes out of this place. $3 billion for 4.5 miles of light rail. This is preposterous.
What do you think it's going to cost?
What?
To North the South
six?
Station. Well, the $1.6 billion is for expanding the South Station, but you haven't mentioned yet what
you think.
It'll
probably be more than that. I mean, when you look at these other projects around the world, the Crosstown project in London,
uh-huh.
which is a big project. Now they're doing a second one. You know, other countries are investing in this stuff while we're sitting around sucking our thumbs. About 900 million a mile. So look in those days. And this is because you need, there are gradual grades that bring you down below the surface. This will be about a 2.8
okay.
mile project.
So about $1 billion more than the 1.6 to fix
yeah.
the...
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, look, that was back in the 80s.
I think it's about, I mean, maybe I'm crazy, but I think the resistance is just taxes. I mean, it's the same resistance we're getting about doing big-time fixes of the MBTA.
Except this project will go a long way toward paying for itself.
How?
People don't understand this. You connect, remember, we have two separate commuter rail systems. I mean, it sounds crazy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But south and north, they could be in two different states. There are huge savings when it comes to operating expenses. And we'll get another 80, 90, 100,000 new commuters if we connect those two stations. Not only that, it's on the Northeast Corridor, and it will be eligible for 50% federal funding. You put all of that together, this is not going
to
be
a major. So people can go right through. They can come from here right through to go up to the northern states.
Yes. On the other hand, and this is something that I'm not sure the governor understands fully, and it's not his fault. I mean, he's folks at MassDOT are looking at this as if it's cost-effective as part of the Northeast Corridor. Look, it's going to be helpful for people to be able to come through the city and go to Maine, and I hope at some point to Montreal. But the thing that makes this so important is that it fully integrates our commuter rail system, saves enormous amounts of money, puts thousands more people on the system, takes 60,000 cars off the road in Boston every day. Think about that. You know, huge impact on climate change and all this kind of stuff. We've got a lot of private groups are interested in this kind of thing. One of them happens to be from Canada. They do a lot of big infrastructure stuff. They came down, took a look at this thing, and they said, this is a no-brainer. This is a no-brainer.
Do you worry about the commitment that is being made to the Green Line, even though at a reduced level, is going to push this thing out, whether it should or not, as a matter of political reality? Do you worry that it pushes out of the mix?
I don't see any reason why it should at all. And we've got $1 billion from the feds for that project, which is important. But, you know, Jim, $2.5 billion for South Coast Rail, that's a $600 million project. I don't know what they're talking about. And one of the things that Stephanie and the governor have got to do, in my opinion, is to get themselves a CEO at the T and a director of planning and construction. I think I've talked about Frank Kevel before.
Yeah, say it again.
Who was my guy.
Yeah.
Who was a Dorchester kid, Northeastern Co-op civil engineering student, went to work at the T. He did $3 billion worth of construction for us at the T when I was governor. On time, on budget, no fooling around. And at this point, the T doesn't have a director of planning and construction. They got about 72,000 consultants that are all over the place. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. The T needs a director of planning and construction like Frank Kevel to take charge of this thing and manage it.
You don't think this financial whatever control board, which has sort of taken control
of
this mess.
Nothing wrong with an oversight board, and the chairman happens to be a guy that worked for me, mm-hmm. and I have a lot of respect for. But in the meantime, the T needs a CEO and a director of planning and construction that can go to work and get this stuff done.
Governor Dukakis, what do you think about the fact that Somerville and Cambridge have committed to kick in money for this?
I think it's very generous of Somerville and Cambridge.
Yep.
You know, most cities don't have a lot of money lying around. I mean, both of those cities happen to be benefiting now from enormous increases in the value of their property. And some of that has to do with the fact that they're so accessible by T.
Right.
The rest of them.
And it will help them even more.
I think it says a lot for Cambridge and a lot for Joe Curtatone and the city of Somerville. And
How about businesses that will directly profit? Because there's been a lot of talk
about
these
businesses kicking
in. Well,
these days we're talking about value capture, which is a fancy term for what? For the kind of value and increased property taxes that these transit projects bring with them.
Right.
And in effect, I think it's fair to say that what Cambridge and Somerville are doing is
yeah.
contributing some of that value capture. But I think it's an important project, wildly overpriced, I mean, over-designed stations costing millions and millions of dollars. I think I've mentioned this before, Jim, on this program. The people of Los Angeles County, amazingly, right, the car capital of the world, voted by better than two-thirds, Marjorie, to tax themselves in the middle of the worst recession since the Great Depression, to raise their sales taxes to pay for what is going to be a very impressive rail-based transit system for Los Angeles. One of the early completed projects is about to open completely, 8.5 miles to Culver City and now the rest to Santa Monica, downtown to Santa Monica, okay? The 8.5 miles, tough project, by the way, has been open for a couple of years, doing extremely well. 8.5 miles, 12 stations, total cost $925 million. So how can 4.5 miles and 7 stations cost $3 billion?
Well, you know, in part, I would say that part of the problem is that we have created, and I think this is a bipartisan creation, this anti-spending, anti-taxing environment. People just repealed, Marjorie and I think for different reasons, the indexing of the gas tax, the pathetically small increase in the gas tax, 3 cents. And it's not, well, Charlie Baker, I mean, frankly, he is honoring a pledge he made and people vote for him. What's wrong with your fellow Democrats in the legislature? They have the votes to override any veto that Charlie Baker would make if they believe in North-South Rail, if they believe in further transportation expansion. All they have to do is pass it, fund it, and if the governor chooses to veto it, they override his veto. Where are they on these things?
I think you got to demonstrate to them that we've got a transportation department that knows what it's doing.
You don't think Stephanie Pollack knows what she's doing?
I like Stephanie a lot. She walked into this mess. It wasn't hers. You know, she inherited it. But the administration has now been in office 16 months, and it's time to get on with it. And I think she desperately needs a CEO of the T, and she needs a director of planning and construction.
But I think there's another issue, and you probably disagree with me on this, Governor, but I'll give it to you anyway, that there's a lot of distrust about these boondoggles. You know, when you have stories in the paper about MBTA mechanics making $300,000, even though they're obviously the outliers. You have stories about runaway trains. You have stories about, people, the House speakers have had their travails with the law in Massachusetts. They're Democrats. You know, we have Sal DeMasi is still in jail for an awful long time, it seems to me, an unfairly long time.
Yep.
And he's ill. But nonetheless, there's a sense that, okay, we're going to have this next project, and people in the public sector are going to make zillions of dollars, and the taxpayer is going to end up picking up the bag. You have to kind of overcome that distrust, don't you?
Yeah.
And how do you do that?
That's what governors have to do, whether it's Mike Dukakis, Bill Weld, Charlie Baker, or the man in the moon. I mean, you've got to do the best you can to put together an administration that, first, is honest and sets high standards of integrity, and secondly, is competent. Now, I'd like to think, at least when it came to public transportation, that we were able to do that when I was governor. But I had the best state transportation secretary in the country. There's nobody better than Fred Salvucci. I'd like to think we set high standards of integrity. We had people like Frank Kevel who knew what they were doing.
Didn't you have a $10,000 a day fine on that short section of 93 that was rebuilt with Bob Tierney? Wasn't that you that did the $10,000 a day fine?
That.
If they were,
I think I remember it was Kitty Dukakis was wildflowers along the highway. Those I remember.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's part of what you try to do when you're in public office so that you can go to people and say, look, we've got our act together. We've got excellent people doing this, but we need some additional resources. And then you hope that people will support you.
Well, and also just to add to Governor Dukakis's answer, I think the answer to your question is if there has not been a governor who's had more political capital to expend than this one,
right.
He is still at 70% approval. If Charlie Baker made a pronouncement tomorrow, I have listened to Governors Weld and Dukakis. I agree with them. We're going to invest in this thing. It's going to cost us a little bit of money up front. In the long term, it's going to pay for itself. You don't think the people would follow in a second?
Well, I think things like having the pension fund of the MBTA be public so people can know exactly what's in there will help a lot.
I have no idea why that should be secret.
Well, they got away with it for a long time. You know, Governor Dukakis, you were famous when you were the governor for taking the MBTA. I'm sure you still do. I live right off of Beacon Street. You know, some days I look at those trains coming down Beacon Street and they're rusting on the
side. They're a disgrace.
And they're rusting on the
Marjorie, they're a disgrace. And the system is a disgrace, covered with graffiti. I take the Orange Line from Ruckels at Northeastern into town all the time. I mean, what does it take to get the graffiti off? Now, when Bill Bratton was my police chief, he was crazier about graffiti than I was. And we arrested 122 of these people. And he worked out a deal, listen to this, with the Boston Municipal Court, whereby these kids would be sentenced to 160 hours of graffiti cleaning under the supervision of a T-police officer. We caught 122 of them. We never had a repeater. Now, you know, what's so complicated about that?
Well, you know, one of the things, I think to Charlie Baker's credit, one of the things he did really early on is he said, not in these so many words, but I think he'd agree with this, I own the T, I own the Department of Children and Families, and I'm going to fix them both. And if I don't fix them, he didn't say this part, but I think he'd agree with this, then I should pay the price. Yeah. So 16, 17 months in, how do you rate this, Governor?
Don't know a lot about the Department of Children and Family. My sense is I have a lot of respect for Mary Lou Sutters, who started with me
in
state government.
I know that.
And she's the secretary, and I have a lot of respect for her, and I think she's doing a fine job. I think the jury is still out on the tee.
How about overall? How do you think Baker is as a leader a year and a half in?
Well, I like him. I think he's working hard. I'm not sure he's the world's biggest risk taker. But maybe that's okay. Maybe you got to straighten the place out first before you start taking risks. But it is 16 months in now. And I just hope first we can get a decision on North-South and get going on that thing. Because, you know, it's not going to happen overnight.
What are they doing with this $2 million that they're appropriating this study? How long is that going to take?
The governor says that he's now ordered or requested the secretary to move ahead on that study. Still haven't any clear idea about what's happening at this point on it. But that's what's needed to complete what was a very extensive study, as you know, under Bill Weld.
So one last thing on the North-South Rail before we move on briefly. I have Stephanie Pollack on television with me tomorrow night. Give me one question on North-South Rail that you would like asked.
What are we going to get going on it?
Okay. I can probably,
you know,
from your lips.
I'm 82 years of age. I feel like a million.
No, but 80 is the new 20. You told us that on your 80th birthday.
And I feel like a million bucks. But remember what John Maynard Keynes said. In the long run, we're all dead.
Yes.
And when you get to 82.
That is deep and true.
That becomes a little more relevant.
So you'd like to see it in your lifetime.
My mother lived till she was 100. Harry Ellis Dixon, Kitty's dad, was conducting the Pops when he was 94.
So
we
both
plan to stick around here for a while. But I would like to see this project built in my lifetime.
We get
with a sense of urgency.
You know, Governor Dukakis, before we do move on further, Jim just mentioned that Charlie Baker said, you know, the Department of Children and Families is around his neck. When you were governor, it's called the Department of Social Services. It drives me nuts. I just mentioned the $85,000 mechanic at the T, toll takers at the Turnpike, $75,000. These social workers make about $40,000 a year. I mean, I guess it's why are we surprised that it's difficult to hold on to these people? I mean, some of them do stay for careers, but it is unbelievable. They've got 18, 20 cases. They're running around with all these kids.
Which, by the way, is one of the lowest caseloads in America. I don't know what happens in other states. I mean, they're way up there. I remember when I was governor, the caseload in Pennsylvania was 75. Can you believe that? And
that's
we
horrible.
Were the folks that took it down to 18 to 20.
Yeah, well,
but Baker, to his credit, said even last month when he was here, in response to a caller on our show, that the caseloads remain still far too high. So he acknowledges.
You know, it depends on the cases, obviously.
But obviously.
So what's the problem? The social workers union isn't wired. How come they can't get any money?
I think social workers doing the kind of work those folks are doing deserve more than $40,000.
Yeah, me too.
A lot more than $40,000, and you know, for what you get from a dedicated, hardworking core of social workers working with these kids, who, after all, are going to be adults. And we've got a choice here, you know. Do we want these kids to be good, solid citizens or what? So supposing we paid these folks $60,000. I mean, would that be some huge addition to a $40 billion state budget?
So.
I don't think so.
Governor, I have two questions before you go.
Okay.
You are of Greek heritage. You're probably aware of that.
Proudly so.
Yes, you are. Marjorie and I believe we should move the Olympics, Summer Olympics, permanently to Greece.
Both I agree.
For the good of their economy and for the take corruption. You're there.
Absolutely. You know, they spent a lot of money, about $4 billion on the Olympics. Some of those facilities are just sitting there. But what a great thing. We'd get off this business about who's going to get it. We would not have situations like the one we currently have in Brazil.
Take a lot of the corruption out of the process.
And, and it would be great for Greece, I don't have to tell you, which is really struggling these days. But I think I've thought for a long time that that's the place for the Olympic Games.
And the last question I have for you is actually on Marjorie's behalf because she's depressed about recent polling. How are you voting on the legalization of marijuana question and why?
I think I'm going to vote against it.
Why is that?
Because I'm very concerned, Jim, about this constant reference to the recreational use of marijuana. It just bothers the hell out of me. Look, this is an addicting drug, like a lot of other drugs. I'm not for prohibition, but we ought to be attacking it as a public health problem the way we attacked, quite successfully, nicotine, also quite addicting. And I'm just, you know, my daughter's the political editor, as you know, for Colorado Yes. Public Radio. And I remember walking by one of the so-called dispensaries before the thing was legalized in Colorado. And the name of the dispensary was Rocky Mountain High. Doesn't sound medical to me.
So Marjorie will be calling you home.
I'll be calling to lobby you.
That's my concern. So if it is going to be legalized, I want the Commonwealth in particular to get deeply and actively involved on this because it's going to be a public health issue.
Well, you know, they plan to treat it exactly like alcohol, and alcohol is a public health issue too, is it not?
Yeah, how are we doing on it?
Well, I don't know. How do you
it's
think
causing a hell of a lot more deaths than opioids, I'll tell
you. And
it's
causing a hell of a lot more deaths and problems than marijuana would ever cause. Would you not agree?
That's right.
So we almost got you on our side or
no?
No,
I think
so.
I think maybe you
I'm
could
concerned.
Switch
haven't
from
decided.
The, switch from the martinis.
Oh,
the
he
album.
Hasn't decided. Let's leave
oh,
it
he
there.
He hasn't decided.
Fine, okay.
Jury's out. My dear wife, who, as you know, is an addict and alcoholic, I mean, recovering and doing great work and so on, she's against it.
Well, I have to say, and she is also one of the most eloquent spokespeople on everything and anything she has ever engaged.
She should have run for the presidency.
Unbelievable.
She'd have won.
She might have won. You never know. Good
anyway,
to see you, Governor.
Thank you for having me.
Thank
By the way, there's
very
a website
much.
For what's the website for the North-South Rail thing?
NorthSouthRailLink.org.
NorthSouthRailLink.org.
Okay. I think a .com.
Right to the point.
We'll discuss it with Pollack and we'll discuss it with Baker when he's here next week. Thank you, Governor.
Governor Mike Dukakis is a distinguished professor of political science at Northeastern University and a visiting professor at the Luskin School of Public Affairs at the gorgeous UCLA. Thank you so much for joining us, Governor Dukakis.
Always
coming
fun,
up,
guys.
We are
Thank
opening
you.
Up the lines and asking you about the North-South Rail Link.
You can't call in, Governor. I want to be clear.
Would it make if you want me to.
A big difference or would it be big dig two? We're asking you next, 877-301-8970 or BPR at WGBH.org. You're listening to 897 WGBH.